You're listening to 90.7 FM KZUU Pullman, a broadcast service of the ASWSU. Live from the Ivory Tower on the third floor of the Cub, this is the award-winning PES. Normally, your host Scotty would be giving you the intro right now, but I think I just cut Scotty off. Scotty is not here today. He was on the phone. I'm hoping that he'll call back so we can get him back on the line here. We are going to be talking about some current news topics today. There's a lot that's been going on this week in the news. We're going to have some witty banter, which is a trademark of the show. Okay, hold on just a second. I think we've got Scotty on the line. Scotty, is that you? Scotty, is that you? Okay, hold on. We're on the air, and I'm going to try to get you on. Hold on just a second. Okay, can you hear me, Scotty? Scotty, can you hear me? Can you hear me, Scotty? Are you still there? Are you still there, Scotty? Okay, well, we're having some technical problems here. I'm hoping Scotty will call back. As I was saying, we're going to be talking about some of our normal topics that we talk about on the PES every Thursday from 11 to 1. There's some news things going on this week, both nationally and locally. Okay, hold on one more time. Scotty, are you there? Scotty, no. Nope. Okay. All right, hold on. Scotty, are you there? Okay, hold on just a second. Okay, hold on. Okay, Scotty, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me, Tom? Tom?
I'm here. I can hear you.
Oh, you can?
I can, yes. Go ahead.
All right, well, that's good. I actually, you know, the funny thing is that I heard the song cut away, then I heard you introduce the show, and then I hear you go, yeah, I think I got Scotty. I'm like, oh, right here, man. Don't hang up. And you hang up on me. I'm like, okay, now you cut me off. Anyway,
okay.
I'm podcasting live from Rainy, Bellevue, Washington, sitting in the cab of my truck. Looking at the beautiful raindrops hit the windshield. Anyway, it's a beautiful day over here if you like the rain. And I'm hoping to make it back over to Pullman tomorrow night because with the amount of snow that they're talking about getting us tonight and maybe tomorrow, it might be a little bit of a difficult dive. They're talking like 14 inches.
Right, through the passes, you mean?
Through the passes, yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with that. But I've been... The last couple of days have been pretty busy for me personally. I've been I had a fly out to Minot, North Dakota, and I was out there for about 36 hours, and I flew back home last night. Got home about midnight, a little after midnight. So it's been a long couple of days for me. And
sounds like it.
Yeah. So now we're back in the swing of things, and I'll be back live in the studio, and then the radio station is sending me down to spring training to report live to everybody on Thursday. How about
excellent
Thursday the 10th, I think it is. So yeah, I'll be down there for the radio station, of course.
Well, is this the Cougar spring training or
no
Mariner spring training?
Seattle Mariner spring training. Plus, there's a golf tournament going on down there that I'll be covering live, and sort of a pro ad, maybe you could say, and I'll be down there with them golfing along and everything, so I'll be able to report live on that too. I don't think I'll be keeping up with all the good guys, but hey, we'll see what I can do.
So you'll be heading down to Peoria, Arizona.
Peoria, Arizona, yes, sir.
Wow.
I'll be down there for 4 days, 3 nights. It'll be sort of fun. So anyway, that's just real quick catch up of what's coming up and what's going on. So
great.
Anyway, Tom, I know you have a whole bunch of great topics for us today, so why don't you Why don't you lead the way, and I'll throw in whatever banter I can.
Well, you know, we've had a busy news week this week, both locally and nationally. One of the stories that has been capturing a lot of attention in the past week or so, and one that should warm the heart of any Coug, is the hot water that the Student Senate at the University of Washington has gotten into for voting down a measure to build a memorial to Colonel Gregory Pappy Boyington, who was a Marine Corps ace in World War II and winner of the Medal of Honor. Just a correction to all the media out there, there is no such thing as the Congressional Medal of Honor, which it's often referred to as, because it is awarded by the president, is not awarded by the Congress. But in any case, he was a Medal of Honor winner from World War II, one of about five, I believe, from the University of Washington alums. He's arguably the most famous World War II veteran and Medal of Honor winner from University of Washington. excuse me. So anyway, the Student Senate, actually the resolution failed by one vote, actually, to have a memorial constructed to him. One of the comments from one of the student senators.
Did you say it lost by one vote?
By one vote, yes. The resolution to build a memorial lost by one vote. And one of the comments from a senator was that Pappy Boyington was a Marine, and that was not the type of person that UW wanted to produce.
He was a what?
A Marine.
Oh, a Marine, yeah.
And therefore not the type of person that the UW wanted to produce.
I see that. I mean, those Marines that go out there and fight for the country and
certainly
everything like that, you don't want to have any of those. I mean, let's make Ted Bundy instead. Let's make guys who just go out and kill women.
Yes, that's probably another very famous UW alum is
Ted Bundy.
So
they'll build a statue to him because he's not a Marine.
Famous bumper sticker you can see around Pullman occasionally is that Ted Bundy was a Husky. And then another comment from another UW senator was, well, there are already enough memorials to rich white men on the UW campus.
Lenin, right?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, what the senator failed to realize is, Pappy Boyington was Native American. He was a quarter Sioux Indian. Also, he could certainly never be construed as rich. He was constantly in debt throughout his life. After he retired from the military, he bounced from one odd job to another. And, you know, when he died, he certainly could not have been considered a rich man, and certainly not a white man in the traditional sense of the word either. So, you know, this just reflects the politically correct ignorance that seems to pervade college campuses these days. But luckily, it's not WSU that's in trouble, you know, as we were last year for the Ed Swan dispositions criteria flap, and then before that, the heckler's veto of The Passion of the Musical, which both were widely publicized incidents nationally that kind of reflected badly on WSU. At last, it's UW that is finally in hot water nationally for this political correctness run amok. And so yeah. I was actually asked to, you know, to blog about this on Palusatics, and I did. And, you know, my main point that I tried, you know, someone wanted to know, well, what is it, you know, from an Eastern Washington WSU perspective? And I said, as much as I'd like to say that it could have never happened here at WSU, you know, I couldn't really say that because, again, based on some of the things that we had happen here last year, you know, political correctness is rampant everywhere, probably on every campus in the country. So it's not that WSU is immune from that by any standard.
I would have to say real quick, the whole comment, rich white people,
mm-hmm.
It's just like the minute you hear that, I mean, all you can say in your head, I mean, the only thing that could be coming out of your mind is screaming to yourself is big time liberal, big time just, it's like immediately all you can think is politically correct, because that's all that is driven into the heads of people for years is all these rich, dead, white guys
exactly.
that did this and did that and rich, dead, white guys. It's almost like being called a rich, white guy is an insult, and you don't want to be part of it. And to top that off real quickly, though, and I would agree, you don't know 100% for sure that the WSU, ASWSU people would have passed it. However, I have to say, I honestly believe that we would not have had somebody be against it because the guy was a Marine. I honestly believe that. Though they might have had a hard time with, you know, there's definitely those who are left of center on the ASWSU. And, you know, they probably would have tried to, you know, find some reason not to honor the guy. But to say that because he was a Marine and he was in the war and he killed people, we're not going to, you know, celebrate that. That I don't think we would have seen our people do.
I'd like to believe that. I wasn't necessarily even when I made that comment referring to the ASWSU Senate, but I was thinking more in terms of, you know, that could have come from something insensitive like that could certainly have been expressed by, you know, a group of students or some faculty members here on campus, you know, that, you know, based on some of the things that have happened with political correctness recently, you know, that wouldn't have surprised me if something like that had been said over here. But I think, you know, certainly when it comes to a competition of liberalness, I think most people consider UW to be the far more liberal school versus WSU. I mean, I think that's just kind of the a generalization that's pretty easy to make. I mean, from my experience. In Seattle they have riots about the WTO, and in Pullman they have riots over beer. So I think that kind of, you know, you can maybe look at you know, the level of activism and things like that, and maybe, you know, see that UW is certainly has a deserved reputation for being PC and liberal. But, you know, my major take on the whole thing was not even so much that it was the students that were to blame, and I think certainly, you know, these attitudes reflect kind of an intellectual laziness on the part of some students, and there was an editorial in the Seattle Times that talked about how students were, these days they're just not concerned with history, and they're more concerned with vain materialistic things, you know, celebrities and fashion and things like that. And I think that may be true to a certain degree, but I would say that any kind of, and you touched on it when you mentioned, you know, dead white men, I think the real blame here these days is the educational system in our country, and it starts, you know, as early as kindergarten all the way up through the higher education system, is that our history is really being rewritten. You know, there's kind of our history is being revised and sanitized and changed into, you know, this politically correct view of things. And part of that involves getting rid of everything that those dead white men that you were referring to did. You know, you look in history books, and there's a lot fewer dead white men than there used to be. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. I think the contributions of other races and women and things like that need to be brought out more, but not to the exclusion of completely erasing and revising everything that ever happened in our history. And a personal example of this was, you know, just this week, my daughter was telling me that, this is my 12-year-old daughter in seventh grade, was telling me that she was learning about Pearl Harbor. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. Why, you know, why don't you tell me what you learned about? And then she immediately started to tell me about the internment camps that were set up for the Japanese Americans during World War II after Pearl Harbor. And you know, this is a setup to a book that they're reading that's called Return to Manzanar, which is about the internment camps. And, you know, again, I on my blog I quoted from a really excellent column that kind of talked about this, you know, how there's sort of a skewed version of history these days. A particular example that he used was at the opening of the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. The Washington Post contacted some Northern Virginia high school seniors to ask them what they knew about World War II. And they knew a little bit about Hitler, a little bit about the Holocaust. They didn't know anything about Mussolini. They didn't know anything about Japanese fascism. They didn't know about the rape of Nanking or the deliberate destruction of Manila or any of the other atrocities that that were committed by the Japanese during World War II. Oh, but they knew a whole lot about the internment camps. You know that, and so I was like, wow, that really resonates because that's the same thing, you know, that my daughter is learning about. And while that was certainly a regrettable episode and you know, was wrong to do, you know, and it needs to be talked about, but is that the most important thing that happened in World War II? You know, is that the message that we get out of World War II, is that we were bad because we put people in internment camps? You know, what about the message of, well, you know, millions of ordinary Americans sacrificed and many gave their lives, you know, to fight this kind of global tyranny and fascism that allows us to enjoy the freedoms that we do today? So,
yeah, it's almost like, oh, man, it's in some ways, when I think about what they're, you know, trying to do is find other things to elevate in order to try to create this quasi-diversity where, you know, it's like, well, if all we talk about are the rich, dead white guys, you know, nobody's going to know about this and that and everything else. And it's like, you know, not to say that some of these things were less important in history, but the thing is that whether you like it or not, America was settled by a bunch of white guys, you know, and America was founded and developed by a lot of white guys. So to try to deny that fact and pretend, oh, gee, America's always been this really diverse place is just silly. You know, and you want to try to include everything in history. You want to try to give the big picture of what history is, but to start cutting out some of the things that created the country and got us to where we are today, to include things that that make it appear more diverse, is not really helping anybody.
Yeah, it's just really a case of the pendulum swinging too far. I mean, certainly I would agree that, you know, maybe 100 years ago, in history books and things that were being taught, it was certainly very ethnocentric. It was very white focused. The contributions of minorities and women and things like that were downgraded. And I think it's great that that's now being included in history. But you can't swing it too far, you know, where you completely remove the contributions of those dead white men either. I mean, I think there's got to be a happy medium that you strike when you come to teaching history. I think you have to include a lot of the traditional things that used to be taught, as well as some of the new things, you know, that we're going into now. I think you can do that. But, you know, I think the problem is a lot of the people that are, you know, professors or have had some kind of influence in teaching, the teachers that are now out there, you know, we have those leftovers from the 60s where, you know, they regarded as America was the evil empire, you know, and so that's kind of the focus, I think, that gets, you know, that gets passed on and gets taught to a lot of kids these days, that everything that we did or everything that we've done in the past has been wrong. You know, it's not just been a long history of exploiting, you know, minorities and native peoples and things like that, when, you know, it just, there has to be a happy medium where it's like we have to talk about the positive things, you know, that we've done. And I can't think of anything more positive than World War II. I mean, if there is such a thing as a good war, you know, I mean, obviously war is a horrible thing and people are killed and wounded and maimed and traumatized and severely affected for the rest of their lives. You know, no one wants war, especially the people that are in war. You know, the soldiers who fought war are the ones who want it the least. But, like I said, if there is such thing as a good war, then World War II would have to be counted as that, you know, because we had enemies that were undeniably evil, I think. And certainly the world is a much better place without Imperial Japan and Nazi Germany anymore. I really don't think there's too many people who would deny that.
I agree. I mean, it had to be done, and it was done, and, you know, this guy was one of the thousands and thousands of people that did his part to help out.
Sure.
And, you know, to deny the fact that he was, I don't know, it just, going back to the comments that were made, that he was a rich white guy, that just shows ignorance on so many levels, it's laughable. I mean, the person who said that, I hope they think about what they said and they realize, gosh, I was an idiot. I mean, plain and simple. I mean, how embarrassing can it be that you make such an idiotic comment and it gets recorded with your name next to it? You know, and then, I mean, you look at it, like you said, the guy was a quarter Indian. He wasn't a rich white guy. He wasn't even rich. I mean, the only thing you have on him is he was a three-quarter white guy.
Well, and one of the things, well, and not only that, he came from a very blue-collar background. He didn't even know his real father. In fact, when he graduated from UW, he actually graduated, his last name was different than Boynton. You know, he didn't graduate as Greg Boynton. I forget what the name was. He didn't find out until he enlisted in the Marine Corps who his real father was. So he was being raised, you know, by a single mom. During the summers, you know, he was born in Coeur d'Alene. During the summers, he would go back to mining camps and logging camps in North Idaho to work to earn, you know, to pay his way through college. You know, so we're not talking about a guy that was born to wealth and privilege. You know, he worked very hard to get, you know, when you think, I mean, back then in the 30s, for someone, you know, typically it was just rich kids that went to college, but, you know, here was this working class guy that managed to you know, to get in and to work his way through. I mean, he's, you know, definitely what you would consider a self-made man. In fact, he worked at Boeing as a draftsman for a year before he joined the Marine Corps. So, yeah, I just reflects, it's like if they had done even the slightest bit of research before, you know, they made those comments like that, it would have made them look, you know, a lot less ignorant. Interestingly, you know, like I said, I was asked actually by someone in Western Washington, you know, for some comments about this, and so I wrote about it because actually I'm an aviation buff. I have been since I was a kid, and I'm old enough to have actually watched, you know, there was a TV show that was based on, Greg Boynton wrote a autobiography that was called Baba Black Sheep, because the squadron, the Marines fighter squadron that he commanded in World War II was nicknamed the Black Sheep squadron. So his book was called Baba Black Sheep. And what's really interesting about all this, or really ironic, I guess, is, you know, Boynton was definitely not your typical man of his times, as far as, you know, what we think of as people back then as being real staid and conservative. And, you know, he was a real character. He was an alcoholic. He was a womanizer. He got in debt frequently. He fought a lot. He was actually a wrestler at UW, and so he loved to wrestle people and fight people. And he would.
So he was a drunk.
Yeah.
Or an alcoholic.
Alcoholic. Yes.
Womanizer.
Yes.
And he was in debt all the time, so he was a Democrat.
Yeah, probably so. I mean, he would certainly fit right in with, you know, Ted Kennedy and him, you know, could have a drink together. But, yeah, you know, his personal life was a real disaster. He had many marriages, like I said. He went from job to job and often got in trouble with his superiors in the Marine Corps. And in the air, he was a great pilot, you know, obviously a natural pilot. You know, was great in dogfights. He was a leader of men, but on the ground, you know, he was a disaster. So he was, you know, kind of a counterculture hero in a way, almost. And I think that's why they decided, you know, in the 70s, because that was in the 70s, they loved all those counterculture heroes. You know, that was the era of Smokey and the Bandit, and, you know, all those kind of guys that were rebelling against authority and stuff like that. So here was like this perfect show, and so it was on the air from 1976 through 78, and Boynton was played by Robert Conrad, who in his own way was kind of a Hollywood tough guy. You know, he had these commercials. You're probably too young to remember, but Robert Conrad used to do these commercials. I forget what the batteries were, but it was like, the battery was like, he'd wearing like a t-shirt, like one of his wife beater t-shirts, and had the battery sitting up on the shoulder, like, come on, I dare you to knock it off, you know, and so it's kind of interesting. But yeah, I like I said, I'm old enough to remember watching that show, and I was a fan, because like I said, I'm an aviation buff, and so I've known about, you know, Boynton for a long time, and again, real interesting character, and as I said on my blog, you know, his reaction to all this, I'm sure, would be, you know, he would just be incredibly laughing his butt off about this whole thing, because, you know, he really never thought the Medal of Honor was that big of a deal anyway. He kept it in his garage. In fact, the last line in his autobiography says, "Show me, just name me a hero, and I'll prove to you that he's a bum." You know, because he was a bum. You know, basically, yeah, he's a hero, and he should be celebrated as being a hero because he put himself in danger. In fact, he was shot down in early 1944 and spent the last year and a half of the war in a Japanese POW camp where he was tortured. So, you know, he sacrificed a lot for his country, but at the same time, he never wanted anyone to think that he was any more than he really was. You know, he was always the first person to admit that he had flaws, and so that's why I think that this whole controversy would probably amuse him greatly if he knew, you know, what his all the flack that his memory was stirring up. I mean, I'm not sure he would, you know, think that he was really worth all the trouble, but.
Right.
So it's pretty interesting. But so anyway,
from what it sounds like you're saying about his history, if somebody were to bring up the fact that okay, we don't think he should be celebrated because in his private life, the life on the ground, he did all these bad things.
Right.
You know, then you could probably say okay, yeah, you might have a case. But the argument they used was he was a Marine and killed people, and
right.
He was a rich white guy.
Well, see, that shows.
Not asinine.
Well, yeah, exactly, because that shows, you know, in our society today and in the politically correct society in which we live in today, it's much more of a stigma to be a white Marine than it would be to be a drunk, you know, because of course you can't that's a disability. You know, you could never, that would be like really unfair if you like got on a guy because he had a disability. Oh, but the fact that he's a Marine and a white guy, well, that's a whole different story. That's open season, you know? So anyway, it's interesting. I got an email today from a bunch of, UW senators. I guess since I was one of the people that had been writing about Boynton. So I'm just going to read a little bit of the email. It's kind of interesting.
Real quickly, was this like an email that was sent out signed by a lot of people? Or were
it was, yes.
Different emails?
No, it was one email that was, let me look down and see who it was signed by. It was signed by quite a few UW senators, let's say four or
this
five.
This should be interesting.
Yeah, there's probably, I would guess, you know, 10 to 15 UW senators signed this, and what basically the gist of the letter, it's called an open letter, and it says many students do not share the opinion that the Senate has expressed by failing this resolution, and in fact many of us argued vehemently for the approval of this memorial. In the end, the decision came down to a single vote, and we want to stress that half of the senators did support the memorial. The comments that were made by a few individual senators during the meeting do not in any way reflect the opinions of us all. All people should be respected and recognized for their hard work, their achievements, and the sacrifices they make for others. President John F. Kennedy, you know, you always got to quote Kennedy, that's great, told us to ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Colonel Boynton is an excellent example of someone who has done just that and did everything that his country asked of him and then more. He is a Marine who went above and beyond the call of duty and sacrificed everything to defend the freedoms and liberties we cherish so fondly, and we are proud that he was an alumnus of our university. We are just as appalled as many members of the public by the openly racist, and see, I like that they said that because it's true, remark that a student leader made. It is truly sad that four decades after Martin Luther King Jr. spoke about his dream for the future, there are still people who judge whether a person deserves to be commemorated based on his or her race, gender, and sexual orientation. We are
That's awesome right there. That is so
yeah.
Awesome.
we are truly sorry that such comments and thoughts continue to circulate in our society, and that over the last week they have become associated with the University of Washington, and then they go on to say, we can only hope that in the future all graduates of our university will be able to live up to the example set by such people as Colonel Boynton. We are very proud that our university produced one of the finest members of our armed forces, and will do. And again, I think he would probably think this is pretty funny to hear all this, but and we'll do everything we can to make sure that in the future UW graduates are associated with people such as Colonel Boynton. We feel truly sorry and apologize to all veterans and to those currently defending our country for not being able to convince the Student Senate to make a decision that would make our university look deserving in the eyes of those who love our country. So that was pretty interesting to get that. And like I said, it was signed by about 10 to 15 UW senators. So
that's pretty interesting. You know, I would assume that those who signed on to that are the ones who were for this to begin with. What would be interesting is to find out who it was that brought this idea up to begin with. If it was the senators or if somebody outside of the Senate came to the Senate to bring it up, or how it actually got to the table to begin with.
Well, I believe it was one of the senators. Yeah, okay. I have another thing here, too. It's kind of interesting. From another blog, it was a transcript from a television interview that a student named Nicholas Baptiste appeared on something called Scarborough Country, which I don't know if that's a cable access show or it's a UW TV show. I don't know. And this person said that they had not actually seen the show to verify the transcript, but there is actually this, you know, what appears to be a legitimate transcript of an interview with this person. Excuse me. And it is mentioned that a student senator, Andrew Everett, was the one that brought the proposal. And looking at my email, I don't see Andrew Everett as being one of the people that actually signed it. But the transcript is real interesting. Oh, okay, it's MSNBC. Sorry. So there's a show on MSNBC, I guess. It's called Scarborough Country. And and Scarborough, I guess, is the MSNBC person that did the interview and talking to this UW student. And you're going to love this because it's all just typical PC pablum. Like Baptiste, I guess, said, let's talk about heroes. A lot of people, obviously, a lot of young people nowadays don't see war as a heroic sport. It's not an adventure. It's a brutal, really inhumane thing. And then tries to tie it into Iraq, of course, like somehow World War II and Iraq are killed. And then this guy makes these ridiculous statements like, Scarborough says that World War II was an honorable venture, right, an honorable war. And the UW student says, it's not that black and white. There's a lot of atrocities committed on both sides. You can't say that that it was a completely justified war. You can't say that America was always in the right or that Britain was always in the right. I mean, America. And then it goes into, well, let me show you. I want to show you a clip from World War II. This is what killing, what Boynton and other people killing enemies brought him into when World War II, obviously the Holocaust. This is Scarborough talking here about Auschwitz and things like that. And Baptiste says, I think that's quite a lie to say that we had to kill 50,000 civilians in Dresden to stop the war. There's no evidence to support that. There's no evidence to support the fact that we had to drop the bomb on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. So, you know, this is just, you know, insanity. But it's interesting.
It stopped the war, didn't it?
Of course. I mean,
it's like, what more evidence do you need? It stopped the war. We won. That's the point of a war. You win.
I mean, yeah, and like I mentioned earlier, I mean, is war bad? Of course it is. And do bad things happen in war? Sure, many bad things happen in war. And the U.S. was not totally blameless in World War II. You know, we did bad things. There were plenty of friendly fire incidents. You know, we killed a lot of our own guys in World War II. We killed innocent civilians, you know, like those bombs that he's talking about that we dropped on Dresden and other cities in Germany. You know, they killed German babies. You know, they killed women, they killed young girls. You know, they didn't just kill soldiers or factory workers or whatever. But that's war. You know, it's horrible and it sucks. But you know, we didn't start it. It was Adolf Hitler that started the war, and any of the bombs that fell on Germany were the responsibility of Adolf Hitler. It wasn't anyone in the United States that had any personal animosity towards the Germans, or the firebombing of Tokyo, or the dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Those were all things that were brought about by Tojo and the other people in the Japanese government that wanted war. So, yeah, it's just crazy to hear statements like that. But again, not really unexpected in 2006, given where we're at politically these days. So.
You know, the sad thing is that in the 1970s and the 60s, when activism was really high, I would almost expect to hear that kind of, you know, anti-American, you know, we're not the ones in the right here. We're just as bad as the Nazis, by God, because, you know, even though we didn't start the war and we weren't taking over all these countries and whatnot, we're bad because, you know, we were in war to begin with, and, you know, our stuff killed people, and, you know, that's just not the right thing to do. The best thing to do is, you know, hold up a sign and sit in front of the doors and say, oh, no, no, don't do it ever again, and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. I mean, that's how you solve things. It's not through force. You know, I mean, that's what I would have expected to hear in the 60s, but, you know, it's just, it's frustrating. And, you know, I find it funny, just a real quick side note, is that, you know, those of that generation are down on the people of this generation because they're not out there protesting stuff left and right, but they don't seem to care about anything. It's almost like they have this apathy. It's like, you know, to each his own.
Right.
And it's sort of funny because it's like, well, that's what you guys spent most of your time fighting for. Oh, don't get in my face, to each his own. Let each person do his own thing. Fine. You got what you wanted. Now you don't like it.
Right.
Now you don't like it. You don't like the fact that everybody sits back going, ah, it doesn't bother me because it doesn't affect me, to each his own. Well, that's what you wanted. That's what you argued for years. You don't want society to look at other people and say, oh, you're wrong, because each person is his own, and, you know, and each person is special in his own way, to each his own. That's what they wanted for years. They got what they wanted. Now they hate it. Now they hate the fact they got, to each his own. They got people who are like, well, I'm not going to protest because that's how they are. That's who they are, to each his own. You know, and it cracks me up. They got what they wanted. Now they don't want it.
Right, exactly. Okay, well, we're going to take a break for some PSAs here, Scotty, if you just want to hang on the line. And actually, there's a boatload of PSAs here today, so I'll try to go through them all here relatively quickly. The Vagina Monologues are coming to WSU. The Vagina Monologues is a play based on interviews with more than 200 women about their experience with sex, violence, and life in general. Tickets are available at the West Entrance of the CUM, the Women's Resource Center, Bruise Books, and the Daily Grind. For more information, contact Diane at 509-335-7472. Come support local independent business and music. Green Frog Cafe in Palouse will be having open mic nights every first Friday of each month. Acoustic music only. Green Frog Cafe is located at 110 Bridge Street, Palouse, Washington. For more information, contact Green Frog Cafe at 878-1490. The WSU McNair Achievement Program prepares qualified undergraduates for future doctoral studies. The goal of the program is to give underrepresented students a chance in the PhD programs. The McNair program is funded by a federal grant awarded to the WSU Graduate School. The grant offers several benefits to McNair scholars, including classes, workshops, mentoring with faculty within your field of study, and much more. For more information, visit Leidy, room 260, AK, or call 335-7702. Submissions are now being accepted for the first annual Wazoo Independent Film Festival. Well, this goes back to our guest a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, which they must have filled out that form.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Which is presented by WSU Student Entertainment Board in collaboration with Wazoo Films. All up-and-coming filmmakers are encouraged to submit their films and are eligible to win awards and prizes. Films must be 20 minutes or under in DVD or VHS format. Include a submission form, which is due March 20th. Submissions can be turned in at the SEB office, which is located on the ground level of the CUB. The festival will be held at the CUB Auditorium on April 19th, 2006. For more information, contact Kyle Lawrence at 509-335-3503 or Nick Bergfold at 360-202-9747. Are you having trouble finding that perfect gift for a friend or a loved one? Or need a video to show what your organization is all about? Then contact Lee Productions for video made just for that special occasion. Some video ideas are graduations, weddings, anniversaries, and birthdays. The video can consist of pictures and or live video with music, and any idea you would like to add to make it special. For more information, contact Lee Productions at 425-343-5529. Does your nonprofit group or organization have an event or meeting you would like to announce on the air? KZUU broadcasts 2 to 3 public service announcements per hour. Fill out a form available online at www.kzuu.org or outside our office, CUB, in the CUB building, room 311. For more information, contact Lucas at 335-2208. Zoe Cafe is looking for musicians to come and play at Pullman's newest cafe. Located in the old Heiko, this coffee house and live music venue is a place for musicians to gain experience, drink coffee, and connect with other artists. Send demos care of Eric Smith to 1960 Northeast Terview Drive. On Friday, February 24th, that's tomorrow, at 7 p.m., the AmeriCorps is showing the film Baraka, an experience in global awareness. Act locally by helping the Community Action Center's food bank. Admission is free with your donation of a non-perishable food item. Baraka is a visually stunning and emotionally moving portrayal of mankind's connection with the eternal. It will be showing at Gladys Community Center's Little Theater at 115 Northwest State Street. For more information, contact Bill Peck at 885-5684. Okay, that's...
you did a darn good job again, Tom. I think for now on, we might just have to give you the PSA job. I'll tell you what. You know, maybe if Glenn Johnson was there staring at you, you might have stumbled up once or twice.
Probably, yes. I don't envy you feeling the pressure of having Glenn stare through the glass at you last week. So I had an easy job. I just got to sit there beside him last week, and I didn't have to say a word. So it worked out really well for me. So yeah, I mean, obviously, a guy of his caliber, you know, it was incredible. He's one of those people, I've known some people like that, but he just has that kind of charisma where when he comes into a room, the room just kind of lights up, you know, he starts talking, he always has something intelligent and witty and funny to say, and, you know, it's just people like that are amazing, and it's always just fun to be in their presence. So I got a real kick out of having the mayor on the show last week, so.
Definitely a lot of fun.
So a big story this week, probably the biggest story in the news this week is, you know, you were talking earlier about how, you know, George Bush was responsible for blowing up the mosque in Iraq. Now, apparently, President Bush is responsible for selling out the security of our ports to a terrorist organization. I'm sure you've heard about that, Scotty, I'm sure. And any opinions on that, or what do you think about the whole Dubai situation?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, the amount of time that I've had to look into it isn't as much as some of the other people, due to the fact that I was in Minot, North Dakota.
Yes, and I'm sure there's...
we don't get a newspaper, you know, and the satellite dishes are yet to be put up. It's more of the fact that I was just so darn busy doing other things.
Absolutely.
6 hours I was out there that I didn't have a chance to sit down and even watch TV or read a newspaper. But what I do know is a lot of senators, reminds me of ASWSU senators right now, ran their mouth off without knowing the facts. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. You have a lot of Democratic senators saying stuff, and, you know, you expect that out of them because they're so anti-Bush. It doesn't matter what the issue is. Bush could give a lollipop to a young girl, and they would start saying, "Oh, he did that so she'd get cavities."
Right.
"Oh, he did that because he's hoping she would choke on it." I mean, Bush can't do anything without some Democrat trying to spin it to make Bush look bad. So I expect Democrats to come out and do this, but the Republicans who have been coming out and saying stuff about this, you got to wonder what their motivation is. And is their motivation, let's try to get a couple points from people showing that, you know, I'm tough on security, or I'm tough on this or tough on that. And, you know, and one of the things that come to mind right away is, why are they against these people? Is it because they're from the Middle East? Is it because they're Middle Eastern? Is it because they're racist? Is it because all these Democrats are racist against people from the Middle East? And because of what they look like,
right,
they want to assume immediately that they're evil and bad and want to get rid of them? Or what's the issue? Because why would they all of a sudden come out without knowing all the information and make these statements like they've been making? Why don't you talk? You know who Tommy Franks is, I'm sure.
Yes.
Most of our audience should know who he is. He is totally for this. He is setting the record straight, and I wish some of these senators would talk to Tommy Franks and understand this. The United States Army had already looked over this, and they're all for it. The thing is, we are not turning over the ports, and they have all control. They're running the ports. They're sending out the checks to the people who work there. They're doing that kind of stuff. This security is still going to be through the United States Coast Guard.
Yes.
We are still going to be in charge of security. The thing is that it's just that reactionism that they have. It's like, I mean, how racist are you to immediately assume that because the guy's from the Middle East, therefore he's a terrorist? You know, they're trying to equate the fact that these guys were part of the Taliban. They're part of, you know, the money that came that supplied 9/11. And it's like Tommy Franks will sit there and tell you, yeah, these guys are the ones who gave us all the intel on the Taliban. They're the ones who allowed us to fly over their country to begin with. They're the ones who are allowing us to use their property, park our ships in their yards. They're the ones who came after Hurricane Katrina, you know, Bush's fault, of course, and they offered like $100 million in financial aid to people. They're the ones who have troops on the ground next to our troops fighting terrorism right now. Yeah, they sound like the bad guys to me.
Yeah,
so that's my opinion, Tom.
Yeah, this is one of those unfortunate situations where, you know, it's a mixture. You know, you get the far left, you know, who wants to hate Bush no matter what he does, okay? And so the far left, whatever he does, they're going to hate him. And it's something like this, especially since it relates to national security, which is an issue that for them is like their worst issue. You know, they have no platform on national security. All they can do is criticize. So they immediately jump on the bandwagon with something like this. You know, Chuck Schumer and all those guys, you know, their press conferences. And, you know, I think Chuck Schumer even had some 9/11 survivors. And it's just horrible, you know, to do, I mean, the worst kind of political grandstanding to do something like that. So you got the far left. And then unfortunately, I think what you're saying is absolutely true about racism or xenophobia or whatever. Now we got a lot of the far right that's weighing in on this issue, that, you know, a lot of these, you know, militia type people and isolationists and things like that are, you know, all these are terrorists and it's all some big conspiracy. You know, Bush is, you know, for a lot of those people, you know, it's Bush is a member of the Trilateral Commission, and he's in with all the oil companies, and these are all just payoffs, and we're selling out our national security. And you know, it's just unfortunate. And I think a lot of the other senators, I think Bill Frist has gotten involved, and some other people. You know, this is an election year. A lot of the Republicans are feeling uncomfortable with Bush anyway. I think just because of his popularity in the Iraq War. They don't want to be that associated with him, so this gives them a chance to get a little distance from him on a national security issue. You know, normally Republicans wouldn't have a chance to distance themselves on a national security issue. They can't come out against the Iraq War. That would be too much. So this is a situation where they can appear to be independent of Bush, but not completely traitorous, you know, by, you know, not supporting, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with, like, supporting our troops or anything like that. I mean, you can seem real patriotic and be against Bush all at the same time. So I think that's probably the motivation for a lot of the Republicans jumping on the bandwagon on this.
The thing that scares me about it is the fact that they are jumping on the bandwagon like they are and making comments like they're making. You know, when you have the United States military coming out in favor of this, you have a guy who's been in their backyard and knows these people, when you have them coming out in favor of this, and then you have senators who, you know, I mean, lick your finger and put it in the air and figure out which way the wind's blowing type of people, you know, it's like, I would defer to our military before I defer to them.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's one of these situations where, it shows how polarized our country is, you know, these days. I was mentioning how we have the far right and the far left, and they're both in agreement on this issue. Most of the people that I would consider to be, you know, mainstream or moderates or whatever are in support of this. You know, like, for example, Bill Clinton is in support of this. Jimmy Carter, you know, my God, as much as I hate to consider him a moderate, but, you know, Jimmy Carter has come out publicly in support of this. Bob Dole is in support of this. You know, so there's kind of a wide range of people across, you know, from both parties, but that could be considered maybe moderates that are in support of this. And like I said, the fact that there's opposition, and you know, no one likes, it seems like these days, moderate is a bad word, or that, you know, if you're middle of the road or mainstream or anything like that, that's kind of a bad word in both parties now, you know, both on the Democratic and the Republican side. You know, if you're, you know, you compromise.
You have to make a decision.
Right. You know, so It's sad. I mean, I don't think anyone, I mean, given George Bush's record on national security, you know, I really don't think that anyone could honestly believe that, you know, he would make any kind of a decision or allow anything to proceed, you know, forward that would be, you know, harmful to the United States. I mean, I think if people really look into this, like you were saying, it's more money, and we're not talking about, you know, people coming over and taking over, you know, these jobs or roles. I mean, most of those jobs are held by Americans. Now, you know, the company that has the contract now is Peninsula Oriental. I'm trying to remember what the E stands for. But anyway, it's Peninsula Oriental something, POE. And they're a British company, and they're just being bought out by this, you know, Dubai company. And so,
yeah,
you know,
because we're going from rich white people to non-rich white people.
I guess that bothers some people. You know, but I mean, first of all, you know, people have to realize that Arab countries, particularly Saudi Arabia, and to a certain extent probably the United Arab Emirates, you know, which Dubai is a part, are heavily invested in this country. You know, they have all that oil money and have, like, since about the 70s. I forget what the statistic is one time, but it's pretty, it would be stunning to most people to realize the amount of real estate in New York City that's owned by Saudi Arabia, you know, by either individuals or by the government, or in probably most large U.S. cities. You know, they own a tremendous amount of real estate in this country. You know, so if they were looking for a way to launch some kind of, you know, secret terrorist attack on the United States, they didn't need a port deal to do it. You know, they had ample opportunity over the years, you know, through various other investments and things that they own in this country, you know, to do it. You know, but it is. It's kind of silly. Just because it's an Arab country, I don't think we should, you know, think of them any differently. And, you know, I heard on the radio coming over here, as a matter of fact, you know, back in 1998, Bill Clinton, when he was president, sold F-16 fighters to United Arab Emirates. So,
yep.
Like someone was making the point. It's like, well, if they really wanted to, you know, launch a terrorist attack on us, why couldn't they just, like, you know, bring one of their F-16s over and try to fly it into the White House? Or, you know, I mean, what you know, it's like, it's just silly. It's like, why suddenly would this all be some, you know, part of some plot? You know, but again, it's just one of those things. Poor George Bush, you know, was born under an unlucky star, because it just seems that he can't catch a break, you know, when it comes to PR, or either that, or he has people around him that just can't really understand or grasp the concept of you know, PR. You know, it's just unfortunately for him that it had to be the UAE, because they have had kind of a dodgy record on terrorism in the past. You know, they're now an ally of the U.S. on the war on terror, but in the past, they had a bit of a dodgy record. Two of the 9/11 hijackers were from the United Arab Emirates, so that, you know, kind of is a bad thing. So those are things that you can't really control but make you look bad. And then, I guess...
Timothy McVeigh was from America.
Right. I know. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, that's what gets out there in the public, and it sticks in people's minds. And so it's kind of like, you know, oh, gosh, you know, why? Yeah, I'm sure Bush is like, why did it have to be that company? And, you know, and then, obviously, it didn't help when the admission came out yesterday that, you know, that Bush had just heard about, you know, the deal. Well, people shouldn't be surprised at that. I mean, my gosh, a president cannot know every single thing that's going on in the government. I mean, he's not going to find out about it until it's in its latter stages. I mean, that's why you have a cabinet. You know, that's why you have, I mean, gosh, there's, in all these different departments in the federal government, there are hundreds of thousands of people that are employed, you know, in the Defense Department and Commerce and Transportation and Energy. You know, they have to be doing something. You know, Bush cannot be out there, like, negotiating every deal and making every decision. I mean, it's like in any other company. The United States is just like a big company. You know, the president doesn't find out about it until it's just about, you know, done. But see, that's another thing that makes it look bad. You're like, oh, well, Bush didn't know about this until just like a couple of days ago. And it's like, yeah, see that Bush, he's so stupid. He never knows what's going on. So it's just, you know, he can't win. And I feel sorry for him, because the poor guy, he can't win. He tries to do the right thing, but, you know, there always seem to be, you know, hunting accidents or hurricanes or whatever, you know, all these things that he can't control just come along and hurt him. So,
I mean, it reminds me of that joke, and I can't remember precisely how it goes, but more or less, a kid, or there's these two kids, and a dog starts attacking one of the kids, and the other kid bravely fights the dog off, and you know, the reporters talking about how a young boy protects his younger brother from a vicious dog attack. And then the reporter found out that the kid was a New York Yankee fan, and the article in the paper then appears, hoodlum beats up family pet, you know, that kind of thing, where it's like, you know, it depending on how the person wants to write the story, you know, you could take one thing and just totally twist it and make it look bad. And it seems like that happens with Bush all the time. It doesn't matter what it is. Somebody will twist it in such a way to make it look bad. And it's this whole blame Bush thing. And the thing is that if they're worried about national security, the senator's worried about national security, you know, and they're getting all these, you know, they're getting all these people up in arms about it, and it's like, well, why don't you do your job, media, and get both sides of the story rather than just calling a press conference and taking everything the senator says? Why don't you talk to Tommy Franks, and why don't you engage these senators who want to say these such things and say, well, you know what? Tommy Franks says X, Y, and Z. What's your comment to that?
Well, you know, and the really sad thing about all this, you know, about the irresponsibility of the media, is that in their lust to discredit Bush, you know, what they do, you know, people don't think about the consequences of, you know, I often say this, you know, I often say that speech is free, in America anyway, but it's not free of consequences, and anyone knows that. I mean, you're free to say whatever you want, but you better be prepared to deal, you know, with the consequences. And one of the consequences that this incident, I'm afraid, is going to have is our image in the Arab world is already, you know, pretty bad and pretty tarnished. And this just gives Al Jazeera and all the other networks in the Middle East yet another thing to hang their hat on to say that America hates Arabs. See, look
exactly.
at this. Look, they hate us. They don't want us to have anything. They don't want us to do anything. They want us just to be, you know, whatever, little third world camel drivers. They don't want us to have any money. They don't want us to have big companies. They don't want us involved with anything over there. You know, it's just horrible. And people are doing it. It's a political thing in the United States, but it has significant ramifications overseas. You know, the United Arab Emirates, like I said, is now a staunch ally of ours in the war on terror. It's a base for our ships in the Persian Gulf. You know, there's been some Al Qaeda arrests that have taken place there. You know, they're a good ally of ours. But now this makes it even more politically untenable for them to be an ally, or for other countries, you know, that are even, you know, that other countries that have a really hard time being an ally of ours, like Pakistan, for example. You know, places that where the political situation is much more unstable. You know, this just does that much more damage to, you know, those types of coalitions. So.
Exactly. It's like, what are we supposed to say? Yeah, be our friend, be our ally, but we're not going to trust you.
We're
not going to give you anything. How's that going to help our relationship?
Yeah, we're going to publicly diss you in front of the whole world and go, well, you know, you could be an ally of ours, but you know what? We don't trust you, so sorry, you can't, you know, we can't have that port contract.
Well, in all reality, though, here's the problem, is that all those senators who are making such statements, they're ignoring the fact that they're allies. They're ignoring the fact that they came in after Hurricane Katrina. They're ignoring the fact that we're using their property and that they're allowing us to fly over and on and on and on. They're ignoring that fact and just saying, hey, they're terrorists.
Right.
They're ignoring everything.
Yeah.
And just,
well, two of the 9/11 hijackers were from there. Yeah, it's like, okay. I mean, you know, yeah, like you said about Timothy McVeigh. I mean, where do you start, you know? It's silly. You know, you can't – how do you indict an entire country for the actions of two – individuals? I mean, that's like I said, that is racism at its worst, I think. So
that's the funny thing too, is like, of all people, you would think the Democrats would be the most sensitive to that.
Yeah, well, see, and I don't think, I mean, who knows what
Republicans are always called racist, but
right.
Democrats
do of course
things, which is ironic because it tends to be the Democrats who do such things.
Right, but they always get a free pass
on
it.
It's something else.
Right. Oh, now we're just interested in national security. You know, it's not racism. We're just concerned about national security. And yeah, they get a free pass on it from the media. Just, you know, going back to the UW thing, it's like, well, no, you know, they get a pass on the media from making what's obviously a very racist statement. About Boynton. Yeah, and the Seattle PI comes in and writes an editorial to defend them by saying, oh, those students were that's the kind of debate that we should encourage, because when you have diversity like that of opinion and debate, that encourages, you know, this is in reference to how they were an alternative resolution that would have a memorial to all five Medal of Honor winners. It's like, see, that was the result of having a good diverse debate, you know, rather than saying, well, gee, it was really racist that they even said something like that to begin with. So, yeah, they get a free pass, and that's what's so frustrating these days, you know, with the media, is that, you know, the left can pretty much say whatever it wants to, and nobody will call them on it, so.
Yeah, that's really interesting to what you're saying about the article that was defending them, the editorial that was defending them, saying, you know, that's the kind of debate we should be, you know, we should be saying they should have.
Right.
You know, by all means, if you want to debate whether you, because, I mean, it's, I don't think there's a problem with debating whether you should be putting up a statue to honor X, Y, or Z. I think
sure.
There should be a debate over it.
Right, there's nothing wrong with the debate. But yeah, don't bring up being a Marine or bringing a rich white guy into the debate. That's clearly inappropriate.
I mean, bottom line, it's not even correct, let alone inappropriate. I mean, let's bring in correct data.
Right.
Let's bring in the fact that,
right,
okay, he did X, Y, and Z. We don't think that's worth honoring. Okay, debate it. But let's not bring up the whole racist aspect of it, which, you know, which is so funny, because when it comes to stuff like that, nobody brings it up as being racist.
No.
You know, and I mean, if we want to be hypersensitive and we want to ignore race, and I mean, if we don't want to ignore race, I mean, essentially, there's been so many calls, let's ignore race, let's ignore race, let's ignore race, but it keeps on getting brought up by people on the left. Race is the bottom line for a lot of people on the left. And it's like, well, if race doesn't matter, then how come you seem to bring it up every single time?
Yeah.
It didn't matter whether he was white or anything.
Right. That shouldn't have been an issue.
The issue was that he was a Husky.
Yes.
And he was in the war.
And he won the Medal of Honor.
And he won a Medal of Honor because of all the things he did in the war. That was the issue. The fact he's white means that he's ineligible to be praised. How racist is that? And I mean, I'll guarantee you that if anybody had said anything that was homophobic or racist against a non-white person,
right,
they would have been drummed out of their.
Oh yeah.
I guarantee there would have been students protesting. There would have been people demanding that person resign from office.
Absolutely.
But because the racist comments were made against a white person, not only are they ignored as racist, except by those senators who wrote you that letter, nobody's even questioning that kind of thing. It's okay to say that kind of thing because it's against the white guy. It's okay to say that. That's crazy.
It is crazy. Well, we have missed our top of the hour break here, so I'm going to play a few songs here from the PES's favorite Reverend Horton Heat, and we'll take our normal top of the hour break, and then we'll get back and talk about some local issues that have been in the news here lately. You're listening to 90.7 FM KZUU Pullman, a broadcast service of the ASWSU. You've been listening to Psychobilly on the PES. Scotty, you're still with me?
I'm here, buddy.
All righty.
So what we got going on now?
Okay, go ahead. Sorry, I had a little problem with the headphones here, but go ahead.
Oh, there we go. So what do we got going on now, Tom?
Well, we're going to switch over to some stories of more local interest here that have been in the news recently. This was in the Moscow Pullman Daily News yesterday. Plans for WSU's Biotech 2 project stumble in Olympia. This is the budget released Tuesday by House Capital Budget Committee Chairman Hans Dunshy. Failed to provide the bonding authority Washington State University is asking for to construct its Biotech 2 building. That's bad news for WSU, which had volunteered last fall to finance the $63 million building using bonds paid off with internal funds from public lands. WSU owns a bunch of timber property. Governor Christine Gregoire had agreed to WSU's plan, which is part of the $244 million supplemental construction budget. The Senate passed over the weekend in Olympia, WSU Budget Director Carl Bimke said. Funding for Biotech 2 is WSU's highest priority for this legislative session. It's part of a six-phase plan to integrate research in the life sciences and biochemistry at WSU. The Biotech Complex of Research and Teaching Buildings is expected to grow along Stadium Way, displacing current facilities such as the tennis courts, which will be moved elsewhere. In time, the Biotech buildings also will replace Johnson Hall. So, That's, again, bad news for WSU, and also bad news for Pullman, because the biotech development, you know, six buildings coming in over the next several years are going to bring a lot more jobs to town, a lot more residents. Well, we don't pay property. The WSU doesn't pay property taxes on the buildings, but they do at least pay a one-time sales tax on the construction of the building. So, yeah, that's bad news for WSU, and also bad news for our city of Pullman as well. So,
sounds like it. It's just bad news for the idea of the research, the everything that goes along with that. The you know, the kind of high tech jobs and whatnot that would go along with that.
Yeah, it's been part of a cornerstone. You know, it's been thought over the last several years that the combination of the biosciences buildings, along with what's going on over at the Port of Whitman County, you know, of course, at Schweitzer, what's going on there. There's some other companies that have some exciting things going on over at the port as well, that, you know, Pullman would become kind of a Silicon Valley in the wheat fields, or Silicon wheat field is what I've heard to, you know, referred to it before, is kind of a, you know, real high-tech research center. So obviously the denial of funding for the building is kind of a stumbling block, and hopefully they can work out something. I guess I was reading the spokesman review earlier that the Olympia was more concerned with, as far as WSU goes, they were more concerned with having the money go towards maintenance of existing buildings versus constructing new buildings, which of course is what universities want to do, is build new buildings versus you know, taking their money and you know, putting it into maintenance of old buildings. So, and then also in the same spokesman review story, it was talking about how that it wasn't just WSU that kind of lost out. There were some things that Spokane had been asking for, some money for cleaning up of the Spokane River, some money for, you know, they're going to be hosting, I forget what year. Is it 2007? It's going to be the U.S. Figure Skating Championships are going to be held in Spokane. I think it's next year. So they were wanting some money, too, to for some facilities and things like that, and that got rejected. So there's a whole laundry list of things that Eastern Washington had lost out on. So it's just kind of, you know, throwing it back at our faces once again that we live in an area of the state that is underrepresented in Olympia. We live in the shadow of Western Washington and Seattle. That was one of the reasons that I was so against I-912 last year, because, you know, I feel like we're already in the shadow of Seattle and Western Washington, and that just, you know, now we're bankrolling a lot of their transportation projects. It looks like, from some of the things I've been reading lately, that they're really dead set on having the tunnel to replace the viaduct versus just replacing the viaduct, which is, you know, that was what we heard about last year. It was all the hysteria about, well, the viaduct could come crashing down at any time. You know, there could be any kind of an earthquake. It would come crashing down, you know. Hundreds of people would be killed. It would be a disaster. So, you know, one would think if that were the case, now that they've gotten I-912 rejected, that the gas tax, they would immediately start, you know, rebuilding the Alaskan Way Viaduct just as soon as they could, you know, to avoid this, you know, horrible cataclysm. But no, you know, now the truth comes out. It's really just a Seattle waterfront beautification project. So they're going to spend twice as much money and probably take twice as long to put in a tunnel to replace the viaduct instead of a bridge like they have now. So, you know, it's just, and we've talked about this before, I think, you know, the whole idea of Eastern Washington statehood. I realize that such an idea is completely impractical, that it would never be approved and have zero chance of ever going forward, you know, either at the state or the national level. But, you know, it's things like this where you just get reminded again of, you know, boy, we live in a state where Western Washington dominates completely. So,
see, all we need to do is we need to get Boeing and we need to get Microsoft to open up some big plants in the middle of Washington, you know, like in the Scabland area.
Sure.
Maybe we could get them in the Whitman County Scabland, open up huge areas, build a whole bunch of houses, make a new area, and, you know, we could make Pullman or Colfax the state capital of Eastern Washington.
Well, as my daughter always likes to tell me, Pullman is the alternate capital of Washington. I guess, you know, that's been set up from, like, long ago that, you know, should something, you know, should some unfortunate catastrophe ever overcome Olympia, which, you know, God forbid that would ever happen, but should there ever be a reason that Olympia is not the capital, then Pullman, for whatever reason, is the backup capital of Washington. So that would be some sweet irony if we ever ended up becoming the capital of Washington. But again,
that would be crazy.
I don't ever see that happening. Yeah. It is frustrating. You know, I know not real well, but I do know personally the three legislators that we have. You know, in this area, Senator Mark Schessler out of Colfax, and then Representative David Burey and Representative Don Cox, and I think they're great guys. And you know, unfortunately for them, they're Republicans, and you know, the Republicans are already a minority in Olympia, and then when you add into the fact that they're Republicans from Eastern Washington, you know, then it just further. Probably, you know, I'm sure they have an agenda of things that they want to do. I'm sure they lobbied very heavily to, you know, to get the funding for WSU's building. But, there's not a lot of arms that we can twist. You know, we don't have a lot of votes over here. You know, it's not like we're not like Snohomish County or something like that. You know, some place like that that's rapidly growing and has a lot of population. People might listen, you know, to some of the representatives from there, or throw them a bone every now and then, just because, you know, they know there's statewide elections coming up, and it's important to them. But you know, we are, you know, literally and figuratively in sort of a a wasteland. You know, we're just about as far away as you can get from Seattle without actually being in Idaho, and it really feels like that sometimes. So
yep.
So also in the Daily Evergreen yesterday, the banner headline was "The Race Is On for ASWSU President," and they announced the ticket lineups. There's actually six tickets. The tickets are Zach Wirtz and Janine Heath, Jason Crittenden and Patrick McKinney, Brian O'Neill and John Mark Detralia. Please forgive me if I mispronounce that. Painted Sky Warrior and Megan Ryan. James Evans and Chris Riegelsberger, again, forgive me on the pronunciation, and Eric Carr and Seth Lake. And then three of the six tickets will be eliminated at the primary elections on February 27th and 28th. And so there was a debate on Tuesday night at Kappa Alpha Theta, which was first, the presidential tickets got their first chance to get out in front of the public and address some issues. You know, various points were made, like Zach Wirtz and Janine Heath said that incoming freshmen in the Alive program are not presented with enough information about the Greek system. Let's see, what else? Jason Crittenden said that the Greek system is a dangerous point. He said that the tier system was completely broken and that many safety issues, such as fire dangers, needed immediate attention. And a tier system is a system used to impose restrictions on fraternities and sororities that do not abide by campus regulations. And let's see what else. Some of the other platforms that were represented. McKinney, who was running with Jason Crittenden, said that they want to increase student input at every step along the way, and they want to make it more difficult to pass mandatory fee referendums, and we'll talk about that more in just a moment. So that went on Tuesday night, and then so there was an editorial in today's Evergreen that was written by Max Kingsbury, and Max kind of took exception with some of the things that were said on Tuesday night. He said he shakes his head and wonders what it must be like to see campus politicians whose campaigns have real issues and aren't just a shot at an awesome resume booster. Largest voting body is the Greeks, and the majority winning candidates for ASWSU president and vice president come from the Greek system. And then Mr. Kingsbury goes on to decry some of the kind of what he thinks is simple positions taken by the candidates. lip service without actually talking about any kind of actual policy decisions and things like that. So what's your take on all this, Mr. Scotty?
Well, okay, first off, when it comes to the elections, you know, and I've been through a lot of them, it's sort of funny. You'll find, as you heard, you know, some of these topics coming up, and now I didn't see the article, so I don't know some of these other issues, but I didn't notice that you mentioned anything about diversity.
That was one of them, so that was an issue.
For one of the tickets or for all of them? Or,
it was I don't know if it was for all of them, but one of the tickets did mention about increasing diversity.
So one of them thought enough of it that they at least mentioned it when they were being interviewed, mm-hmm. that it sounds like. Because essentially what it seems like, and, you know, a lot of the minority groups who have their own little clubs that the candidates come talk to, you know, some of them really get uptight about this because it's like, you know, we've never seen you in our lives, yet here you are coming before us today asking for our support, saying that you support us on and on and on. And it's like, well, you haven't shown it for the last 3 years, so why all of a sudden are you, you know, now we need to be in your back pocket and stuff. And it's sort of funny because, you know, it's very true, especially those who have been in ASWSU and other areas of student leadership. If they haven't been showing their faces at these meetings up until 3 months ago when they decided they were going to run, you know, you'd have to question their true commitment to quote-unquote diversity. What is their point? Or is that to me is the biggest key phrase of any student election for the last 10 years has been diversity. Of course, a couple years ago, Pullman Transit was huge. But now that that's been settled, that's not really been anything on the hot plate for a while. But diversity, 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 that's like the thing that they try to use to win elections because they pander to the votes that they're trying to get.
Sure.
They'll, depending on the audience that they're at, all of a sudden their comments get pushed towards that audience, you know? And I mean, I guess all politicians do that kind of stuff, but it's sort of funny that you know, I've seen it so many times, and, you know, and with the kind of turnover that you typically have, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, you know, the people who are around now weren't here, and they didn't see the same kind of thing happening over and over and over again, where you have these student leaders going before the groups trying to get their support, and, you know, up until that point, they'd never been to that student group before, you know, and
mm-hmm.
and or you do have the ones who realize, hey, I'm going to be running for president. I realize these people are dubious of my support towards them because I haven't been there. So before I announce my candidacy, I'm going to start making my face known and my presence known so they will, you know, not question my commitment to diversity at Washington State University. You know, and the bottom line there is I just question that, you know, diversity to me has always been an issue of we got to talk about it to get elected, but once we're elected, we're not going to really deal with it. You know, it's just one of those little issues that they try to, you know, it's one of those ones you have to deal with in order to get elected, because I guarantee if some candidate, and I mean most of them have websites anymore, and I bet if you're to go in every one of those websites, they'll have some comments on diversity. Whether they, whether there's a true issue or a need for it or not, they will have comments on it because they have to. There are certain things they have to cover. Another one, of course, is tuition. They're always worried about tuition going up, the price of going to school going up, and everything like that. You know, in all honesty, the issues that I think they really need to talk about are, well, first off, the stadium thing, which I know you're going to get to.
Yes.
And the other thing is that this Cub stuff is not set in stone. This Cub stuff is not done yet. The construction's not started. Things can be changed. And honestly, I think that the student leaders need to stand up and say, look, there are some things wrong with what's going on with the Cub. We are going to be spending all this money in order for the right to shop at the bookie. And we're going to lose a lot of the space in the Cub for student programming in order to give the space to the bookie. And if the Cub renovations are going to cost so, and then one of the arguments is you have to have a bookie in the Cub because the bookie is going to help pay for everything. Well, if the renovation costs are so programs and the student organizations and the ASWSU and keep the bookie from taking up a quarter of it. Because, you know, and that's what they're trying to say. Well, if we don't have a bookie there, it's going to cost the students even more money. And we have to have this. And it's like the student leaders need to step and say, look, we need to be responsible with the students' money. We're not being responsible right now because we're asking for way more than we can chew off. We're asking for way too much because we have to have a quarter of the bookie, or excuse me, a quarter of the cub go away because we can't afford what we're doing. What the whole purpose of this renovation started out with, we need to update the heating system. We need to update the cooling system. We need to update some of the infrastructure because it's 50-plus years old, the roof and whatnot. That's what needs to get done. That's where the money has to get spent. Okay, after that, let's figure out how much do students really want to spend and how much space do the students really want when it's all said and done? And do students really want to pay money so the bookie could take over the cub and have the privilege to shop at the bookie building? And do we want it to become a mall or do we want it to remain student space? So the thing is, we have to look at where is this money being spent? Okay, figure out what is it going to take to do the infrastructure, and then what are the things that we have to have? Do we want to have remodeling done? Do we want to change the space around a little bit? Do we want to get rid of the bowling alley, get rid of the video games, get rid of the pool tables, get rid of all the recreational options there and turn it into a bookstore? Do we really want to do that? Obviously, the answer is yes, because that's what's going on, and nobody's stopping it. The student leaders need to step up and start this dialogue now before it is too late. They need to say, do we really have to replace this furniture at a cost of X when this furniture is actually reasonable and it's functional? Or do we really want new furniture? If we do, fine, then we need to pay for it. But the question is, does the bookie need to take over a third or a quarter of the cub to help pay for this process? Is that really necessary? Are we willing to give up for eternity the student space? You know, and according to somebody who's close to ASWSU, whether it's a senator, I'm not sure their exact position within ASWSU, they were saying the administration is who is taking a hold of this cub project ever since the students voted for it. They've taken a hold of it, and they've changed it around from what the students and the student leaders originally wanted. They've changed it around. They're the ones who are pushing the bookie into the cub. They're the ones who want the bookie building. They want the bookie building to do something else with it. They want the bookie out of there. They're looking for a new place. They found the cub. They're forcing it on the students. The student leaders need to stand up now and say no, no, no. They need to make a unified voice, or they need to just roll over and take it, one of the two.
Yeah, it sure seems like there are a lot of real substantive issues, like you're talking about, with the cub and the Martin Stadium renovation. ASWSU has a certain amount of money at its disposal every year, you know, how that's going to be spent. And that seems to be more of a substantive type issue than what you're referring to as diversity, which, you know, really, how much does a student government...
The diversity...
How much do they have to? How much effect do they have on that to begin with, really?
Right.
I mean, what can they really do about that?
Exactly. That is huge lip service. The ASWSU, obviously, they can do certain things to promote diversity. They can you know, make it well known that they're, you know, in favor of diversity. They can, you know, do all this lip service and stuff.
Maybe, but it's not like they control admission to the university or anything like that.
They obviously, you know, they obviously support a lot of these committees. And as we know,
right,
committees get the first dibs at money.
Right.
They support these committees, and a lot of these committees are for diversity. And, you know, and that's showing their support and everything like that. And they're saying, hey, we're not going to cut those. We're going to keep them as they are. You know, but the thing is that it's like, what are the issues that we have to face today that's going to make it better for students, not only today, but 5 years, 10 years, and 15 years down the road? Is the cub renovation that we're talking about today going to serve the best interests of the students in 15 years from now? Are the students in 15 years going to say, you know what, it really sucks that we don't have enough space? Because as it is right now, student organizations are complaining, hey, we're cutting down our space, we're not having as much space as we'd like. KZUU was almost totally cut out of the cub because of the space issue, and it wasn't until the students really started saying, hey, no, 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 no. But it's like, think about it. One quarter of the cub floor space could be for student organizations. Organizations could get more space that they need. Organizations could get more office space. New organizations could get a place in the cub. But no, we're going to give it to the bookie. And then the whole stadium issue. And this is one that I honestly take a lot of issue with. And I think this the athletic department and WSU and everybody else needs to step up a little bit and discuss this, because how long have we been hearing about stadium renovation? How long have we been being told, yeah, the stadium's going to look like this? They've shown the artist renditions of what the stadium would look like. They did not show the student section with no changes. They showed the student section having changes as well as the rest of Martin Stadium. But nowhere along the way did they say, oh, yeah, by the way, these changes here would have to be funded by the students, otherwise we're not going to do them. No, the funding was going to come from private sources. There was never a talk that we're going to stick it on the students. But then all of a sudden, either they're not getting the private sources they want, or they're figuring, what the heck, we're going to stick it on the students. So then they come to the students and say, look, why don't you impose this mandatory fee of $25, not on just the students who go to the athletic events and buy the sports passes, but on every single student at the university. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Here you're talking about the stadium renovation, and you're showing all these renditions that are grand and grandiose and great, and it's going to be paid for by private donations. But then all of a sudden you're like, oh, yeah, and if you guys want your part done, you're going to have to pay for it.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's disingenuous on their part.
After the primaries that are coming up next week, we will have to look into maybe having the three tickets that are remaining, maybe having them on the show and letting them have a few minutes to kind of answer some questions like you've been bringing up right now. So
I would love to, because I want to see what kind of true passion they have for this, or if it's a lip service on their part for this part too. Because honestly, I think that the students need to elect somebody who's going to and the problem is that the president and the vice president aren't necessarily going to be the ones. You know, the president can say, hey, you know, Senate, I want you guys to do this, I want you to do this, and I want you to do this, but they also need to elect the senators who are going to stand up for them as well and fight certain things and say, you know what, maybe the Cub project is what they want. Maybe they want the bookie to take a quarter of the Cub away. Maybe they want to pay to shop at the bookie. Maybe they want to get rid of the recreational things. Maybe they want all those things, and if that's what they want, that's what they're going to get. But the problem is those who want it today are going to be gone by the time they actually do get it, and they're wishing those things on future students. And they're obviously going to be putting that pay on those future students too,
right,
for a lot of years to come,
yep,
in order to be able to shop at the bookie mall. But I honestly think that some of these people who are going to be running will probably have serious considerations about that, but it's like, at what point is it going to be too late? I mean, we're talking, by the time these guys get into office, I think it will be too late, because by then summer will be done, you know, and the problem is that the WSU has found the best way to get their way without the students complaining, do it during the summer.
Right.
They most of their big things that they change about the university that causes the students to complain is done over the summer when there's no students around. So they have no opposition. They can just do it, and the students come back. They can complain all they want, but, hey, it's been done.
Sure.
Sorry.
Sure.
You know, it's and obviously the university knows that, and that's what they do. They go out of their way to do what they want to do without the students having much of a say, because, you know, like I said, summertime's a great time to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a break here and do some PSAs, and then we'll come back in our final few minutes, and we'll talk a little bit about sports.
Okay.
All right. The Vagina Monologues are coming to WSU. The Vagina Monologues is a play based on interviews with more than 200 women about their experience with sex, violence, and life in general. Tickets are available at the West Entrance of the Cub, the Women's Resource Center, Bruise Books, and the Daily Grind. For more information, contact Diane at 509-335-7472. Come support local independent business and music. Green Frog Cafe in Palouse will be having open mic nights every first Friday of each month. Acoustic music only. Green Frog Cafe is located at 110 Bridge Street, Palouse, Washington. For more information, contact Green Frog Cafe at 878-1490. The WSU McNair Achievement Program prepares qualified undergraduates for future doctoral studies. The goal of the program is to give underrepresented students a chance in the PhD programs. The McNair program is funded by a federal grant awarded to the WSU Graduate School. The grant offers several benefits to McNair scholars, including classes, workshops, mentoring with faculty within your field of study, and much more. For more information, visit Leidy, room 260, AK, or call 335-7702. Are you having trouble finding that perfect gift for a friend or a loved one? Or need a video to show what your organization is all about? then contact Lee Productions for a video made just for that special occasion. Some video ideas are graduations, weddings, anniversaries, and birthdays. The video can consist of pictures and or live video with music, and any idea you could like to make it add to make it special. For more information, contact Lee Productions at 425-343-5529. Does your nonprofit group or organization have an event or meeting you'd like to announce on the air? KZUU broadcasts 2 to 3 public service announcements per hour. Fill out a form available online at www.kzuu.org or outside our office, Cub Room 311. For more information, contact Lucas at 335-2208. Zoe Cafe is looking for musicians to come and play at Pullman's newest cafe. Located in the old Heiko, this coffee house and live music venue is a place for musicians to gain experience, drink coffee, and connect with other artists. Send demos care of Eric Smith to 1960 Northeast Terreview Drive. On Friday, February 24th at 7 p.m., the AmeriCorps is showing the film Baraka, an experience in global awareness. Act locally by helping the Community Action Center's food bank. Admission is free with your donation of a non-perishable food item. Baraka is a visually stunning and emotionally moving portrayal of mankind's connection with the eternal. It will be shown at Gladys Community Center's Little Theater at 115 Northwest State Street. For more information, contact Bill Peck at 885-5684. Submissions are now being accepted for the first annual Wazoo Independent Film Festival, which is presented by WSU's Student Entertainment Board in collaboration with Wazoo Films. All up-and-coming filmmakers are encouraged to submit their films and are eligible to win awards and prizes. Films must be 20 minutes or under, in DVD or VHS format. Include a submission form, which is due March 20th. Submissions can be turned in at the SCB office, which is located on the ground floor of the Cub. The festival will be held at the Cub Auditorium on April 19th, 2006. For more information, contact Kyle Lawrence at 509-335-3503 or Nick Bergfold at 360-202-9747. Okay, this is the point where, Scotty, you normally play your little Cougar Fight Song CD, which I don't happen to have. I have one at home. I should actually bring it in. It's not as cool as yours, but we have a CD of the fight songs of the Pac-10 at home, so maybe I could bring that in. So we have Cougar men's basketball coming up tonight at Friel Court. The Cougars are going to be taking on the Cal Bears tonight at 5:30 p.m.
Now, isn't that game, that's going to be televised?
It is. It's going to be on Fox Sports Net.
Yes.
So tune in at 5:30 to watch the Cougs if you can't make it down to Beasley tonight to watch. This actually is the next-to-last home game of the season, so this might be one of your last chances to see Dick Pennant coaching the Cougs. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen with Dick next year, but this could be his last season, so we're could be running out of time. The Cougs are also playing again at Friel Court on Saturday at 4 p.m. They'll be taking on the Cardinal from Stanford. And that's actually going to be not nationally televised, but regionally televised game. It'll be on ABC.
Wow.
Yeah, I can believe it or not. On ABC at 4 on Saturday. And then the Cougs
games were televised on ABC. That'd be cool.
Yeah, and then the Cougs will be traveling down to the desert next week to be take on the Arizona schools. And then we got the Pac-10 tournament coming up at the Staples Center in L.A. On March 8th, so I'll be here before we know. And this is the first year ever that all 10 teams in the Pac-10 will be eligible to play in the tournament. Women's basketball tonight is down in Berkeley. The Lady Cougs will be taking on Cal down there at 7 p.m. And then on Saturday, they'll be over in Stanford playing the Cardinal at 2 p.m. And as far as Coug baseball, which actually is off to a pretty good start this year, I think.
Yeah.
They're doing well. I think they've only got 2 losses, it looks like, so far, as opposed to, looks like, about 6 wins. They actually were down in Portland today. They were down in Sacramento in a tournament, taking on Portland at 10 a.m., so that game is probably about halfway through right about now, so no idea the score, but hope they're doing well.
Sure.
And as far as intramural sports goes, the last day to sign up for the indoor tennis tournament is today. Play begins tomorrow. Registration fee is $2 for singles and $4 for doubles. Also, it looks like the last day to sign up for the Northwest Regional Basketball Tournament is today, and play there begins on March 4th, and that is $210 per team registration fee. And then coming up next week, there's going to be registration for the Soccer League from February 28th through March 1st. So it's going to be registration. Play begins on March 5th, and the registration fee is $30 per team.
Cool.
So.
And then, of course, softball is coming up in about a month, but that's the biggest and most important sport of the summer, the semester anyway. So.
Yes, I see that. Softball league registration March 21st, 22nd.
Okay. Cool.
And play begins on March 26th. And is it, now, is that open? Is that just for students or?
The way it works with intramurals is WSU students play for the money that they're that they advertise, like $2 per person.
Right.
$2.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And all WSU students are eligible to do it. WSU faculty and staff members are also eligible to participate in WSU intramural events. However, every semester they have to pay an extra $10 fee for, and it's good for the whole semester, but they have to pay an extra $10 once per semester in order to participate in intramural events. And this is because WSU students pay the SNA fees, which go towards this. So that's why the fees are so inexpensive to play.
Yes, as
that's
it should
why
be.
Faculty and staff have to pay a little bit of extra because they're technically not putting in the SNA fees.
Right.
So, you know, so it's all fair and everything. And so faculty and staff members can also participate in these events. Now, they also allow the wives, husbands, or spouses and partners of students and faculty and staff to participate in events. So if your wife works for WSU or your husband works for WSU.
Which my wife does work for WSU, yes.
So she works for WSU. Tom, yes. You're eligible to play intramural sports.
Well, that sounds fantastic. I was just, I was going to say I had seen your profile and saw that you were a big softball player. And
oh, yeah.
That's actually something that I've been wanting to get back into for several years. When I was a kid growing up, I come from, like, softball in my genes. It's like everyone in my family, it's like, learns to play softball. I grew up in rural Southwest Virginia, and that was just like, you know, softball was just life, you know, for everybody, you know, men, women, boys, girls, whatever. And so, and I really enjoyed it when I was growing up and, you know, played it all through college, and haven't played it in a while, though, but certainly I'm kind of having a hankering, I think, to get back out on the field. And I've got my old glove. You know, I have my old glove from when I was growing up, and so now that I've got that, I think I want to you know, maybe get back out on the field and hit some balls. So that's why I was kind of curious about what the situation was with softball. So yeah, it's good.
Or staff members or the spouses of staff members are eligible to play, and one other group of people are eligible to play: WSU alumni who are members of both the Alumni Association and the WSU Rec Center,
mm-hmm.
are also eligible to play intramural sports.
Excellent.
So there's a lot of different ways people who are in Pullman are eligible to participate. And, you know, there's a large percentage of people in Pullman that will somehow fit those,
sure.
those one of those things, you know. So it's pretty cool. It's, you know, I mean, it's, I guess you could say it's softball light. And as far as, you know, it's a short season, six total games,
mm-hmm.
plus playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
which is probably good for an old man like me that there's only six games. So
yeah, and I guess, you know, for the old man and you, some of the rules are in such a way that there's they try to eliminate all possibilities of injuries.
Uh-huh.
They haven't gone to ghost runners yet, but pretty soon after you hit the ball, it's like, okay, your ghost runner just made it to first.
Right. But so not quite that easy, but
not quite that easy. Yeah. But yeah, there's no tag outs at home anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's a finish line, so to speak. And
okay,
it's sort of an interesting thing. They have the commitment line, and it's an interesting concept to say the least. But it's all good. I mean, like I said, it's go out there, have some fun, win a T-shirt if your team goes all the way. You know, that's the goal for a lot of people. It's like, you know, it's. You want to have a T-shirt. You want to be the guy winning the T-shirt, and you know that's what the team goes out for and everything. So, It's a lot of fun, and, you know, people should participate, and, you know, and they have, as you see in that activities listing you have in front of you, Tom, there are a lot of opportunities. You know, anything from cribbage tournaments to, fun days at the rec center with all sorts of different games and activities to wrestling and soccer, and, you know, there's different sports offered in the fall and the spring depending on which ones they are. There's a couple sports that are big enough that they'll do it both times, like softball. There's a fall and a spring softball season. You know, so there's different sports, though, and, I mean, there's just a lot of opportunities for people to participate in some way in some sort of event that's, you know, competitive in nature.
Sure.
And to go out there and have fun, and I think that's great, and,
yeah.
I'd like to see more people doing it, and I know our time is over.
Yeah, the next CJ is here and ready to go. So
there. Well, I appreciate her not choking you off the air and throwing a song on. So let me step aside and say, this is Scotty
and this is Tom,
and you've been listening to the PS on KZU 90.7 FM,
and we'll see you next week.
All right.